Let's talk to Bruce Williamson. He's from Rail Future, an independent campaign group campaigning for a better railway. Well, we can't disagree with that, can we, Bruce?
Well, certainly not. And let's hope that, simplifying the ticket structure will make things better. But I have my doubts,
Funnily that. Well, what I love about this is that rail bosses are basically saying, look, we had no choice. These rail fares have all been set. It's not our fault. We haven't been deliberately trying to make hundreds of pounds out of people unnecessarily. We're as much victims as the customers. That's very much the tone I'm getting from the rail companies.
Yeah, I mean, there is some truth in that. There's some sort of anomalies that have been inherited from the days of British Rail, and the overall level of fares is set by the government. So the train operating companies don't have very much room for manoeuvre. But what they are able to do is do what they like with sort of off-peak fares and these sort of advanced super discount return fares, which is part of the complexity, really. What the train operating companies are doing is trying to encourage us to use the trains when they're not busy, which is why they offer all these sort of super cheap advanced fares. But obviously, we want to travel when we want to travel, which may not be the same as when the train operating companies want us to travel.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I can completely understand that peak travel times cost more. I completely get that. And actually, it's actually to everyone's benefit, because it means that people who don't need to travel at those times, who can travel earlier or later, will do so. And that frees up train space for those who have to be on those trains at that time. But I mean, every time I buy a train ticket, it's one of those sort of, God, have I got a spare half hour? Right. And you settle down and I'm thinking just something really simple. I've got to travel to Birmingham on that Tuesday and come back on the Wednesday for some work. And I'm sitting there with all these different options, and I can use it on that, but that's transferable onto that and that's not. But if I buy those two singles, you virtually need a mathematical PhD to be able to work out what the best deal is.
Well, you do, absolutely. And the poor old rail passenger, poor old Julia Hartley Brewer, shouldn't have to sort of jump through hoops to sort of find the cheapest deal. It should be possible for the ticket machine or the human to offer you the cheap deal right from the get-go. And, that's the objective here. Hopefully they'll go some way towards it. But, because the ticket system is so complex, and because the train operating companies have all these discount fares, it's hard to imagine how much it could be simplified without removing those cheap tickets and without denying the train operating companies the freedom that they want to sort of fill the empty trains.
Well, that's it. I mean, again, a lot of it is that these different train tickets will be different journey times as well. A lot of it, you can pay half the price to have a journey time that's an hour longer because you stop everywhere along the way. Now, that seems to be perfectly reasonable, because for a lot of people, there's a trade-off of time versus money. For others, it's money versus time. And people just have different priorities and different needs. And so those are really useful. But this is the advanced passenger ticket thing. Now, this helps people who can make plans in advance, and obviously it's a way of providing cheap tickets for people who will need to travel and couldn't otherwise afford, especially some of these intercity journeys. Extraordinarily expensive. Anything going in and out of London, going more than 100 miles, is absurdly priced on a normal ticket if you buy it on the day. But what is the justification that everybody who would worry about the cost of a ticket somehow knows a month in advance they're going to travel?
Well, they often they don't. I mean, that's the downside of offering these sort of cheap tickets. It's inconvenient for many people who, like you say, you can't plan months in advance. So, the vast majority of us want to just get on a train when it suits us and to be flexible about, when we travel. Another one of these sort of hoops you can jump through is splitting your ticket. Are you familiar with that idea?
So, say that again, Bruce.
Splitting your ticket.
Splitting? Yes, I have heard about this, but explain it.
Okay, so I buy a ticket from, let's say, Bristol to Birmingham, which I've actually done in the past, and that costs, I think it's something in the region of 50 quid. If instead of buying the one ticket, I buy two tickets, I go from Bristol to Cheltenham and then Cheltenham to Birmingham, I save about 15 quid.
Yeah, even
though I stay on the same train, and it's totally above board. The ticket inspectors just, look at it and say, that's fine. And that's a ridiculous anomaly.
But why does that anomaly exist? Is that because the train fare between Bristol and Birmingham has been set somehow by the authorities?
Well, I think it is one of these historical anomalies that certain journeys are considered commuter journeys, so therefore they're subsidised because it's essential, whereas the intercity journeys aren't considered essential and are subsidised less or something stupid like that. So by splitting your ticket, and you can do it again at different stations and split even more and save more. But of course, if the split ticket becomes automatic, which would be great, obviously, that would result in a loss of revenue for the train operating company. So how are they going to sort of claw back the money?
They'll make it up somehow. Will they make it off the season ticket holders?
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, actually, season ticket holders is another thing that... one of the things that would be nice is because a lot of people work part-time these days, and it would be nice if you can buy a season ticket that works just 2 or 3 days a week.
Because unless you work a five-day week throughout the year, it's not worth your while buying a season ticket, is it?
Well, no, it's all or nothing. And you know, where's the sort of flexibility for people who, you know, who have changing work patterns these days? I think there's a definite case for doing something about that.
So, in terms of the season tickets, is that set at all by the government in terms of, because obviously when we hear about these price rises that go up in January every year, there are certain percentages, there are certain things that set, certain aren't. In terms of what they have to charge for the season ticket and who it's available to, is that set in any way by the authorities, or is that up to the rail companies?
Those are called, they're considered regulated fares because they're considered kind of essential for people to get to work, whereas then they're not off-peak leisure discount tickets where the train operating companies have some flexibility. So yeah, the price increase is regulated by the government every day, but I'm sure they could come to an agreement where it would be sort of pro rata. You know, your 3 day a week season ticket would be 60% of the whole week one or something.
I mean, the trouble with a lot of these rail fares, when you look at them, I mean, if I'm travelling on my own which for work, then obviously getting the train, obviously, absolutely. And I've got to be honest, I don't really like driving very much, and I'd rather get some work done or watch a film and relax. Or let's be honest, drink. But it doesn't go very well with driving, I find. And certainly the police don't like it. But if you're travelling, there's more than two of you, certainly if there's more than two of you, if you're travelling husband and daughter as well, it's always cheaper for us to drive. And this is the thing, is that an awful lot of the time, I could go to New York and back for the same price as a single ticket to Birmingham.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the reality is most people drive on their own, don't they? Or the average car occupancy is about 1.5 people.
To be fair, my husband doesn't like going in the car.
But I mean, you know, I could throw another complicating factor into the mix there. There is such a thing as a family rail card you can buy, and you get sort of discounts for families to travel by rail. But obviously, that's another sort of...
Can I point out, family rail cards, not good value if you've only got one child?
Well, indeed, yeah.
But everything that's a family discount always involves two kids. Sometimes for holiday things and for obviously something to sort of chess or something, we just email around the class. Does anyone want to lend us a kid? Because then it's worth our while getting this discount. We'll just buy another child for the weekend. No, but this is the thing. We are in a situation where for a lot of people, once you've got those sunk costs of using a car, you may as well use it. You've already got the cost of buying the car, the depreciation. You've got the cost of taxing, residence parking, all of the other things, and the MOT. You may as well use the car and drive down the percentage of those sunk costs. Because all you're going to have to buy is some petrol.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, the rail travel, certainly for walk-on fares, is not competitive compared to the car. And, you know, it's very much at odds with a government that claims to be green. It claims to want to encourage, you know, public transport and do something about congestion. But the pricing is just driving people off the trains and onto the roads. And really, clearly, that's to no one's benefit.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Bruce Williamson, Rail Future, which is an independent campaign group for a better railway. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us.